The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
Southern Sports Today proudly presents The Chuck Oliver Show. It's an inside look at everything college football. Now live from Atlanta, Georgia, it's time to talk college football with the reigning king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
We should pay particular attention to one draft prospect out of Tuscaloosa. And especially the path he took. Chuck Oliver Show on this Thursday. And I say this Thursday, it's Combine Thursday. That's right. We got things going on that actually count on your permanent record now. When I say permanent record, I can't tell you what year it was. I can guess. Can't tell you what year it was. Might have been 2016, John Ross ran so fast that I think if he would have been wearing Nike, he would have won an island. Heath will give you those details later, but that, like, it's the kind of thing you remember. That's the permanent record. Now, John Ross, I think, sprinted. He ran fast in a straight line. He was a receiver out of Washington, I think. And he showed up in Indianapolis, and everybody already knew he was fast, but boy, was he that day. And he became a top 10 pick. I was going to say first rounder. I think he went top 10. Couldn't stay healthy, this, that, and third, whatever. The story about John Ross that everybody remember forever and ever, amen, is his time at the Combine. So that's your permanent record, man. That's just what it is. When I say we should, and that's going on right now, and Dave Bartu's up there, and so they've got on-field stuff, and they people filling the cup and lifting weights and just the vertical, all of that's happening. When I say we should pay particular attention to one draft prospect out of Tuscaloosa, there's always a bunch of them, and there were before Nick Saban, not as many. There are going to be a lot of draft prospects at Alabama after Nick Saban, especially with what it looks like the next coaching staff will be. When you start with Kalen DeBoer and then a staff full of coaches that he trusts, well, that tells me that, all right, it's probably going to be successful. I don't know how long he's going to be there. I don't know how great of a hire he will continue to be. Looks good at first in the SEC, but, I mean, full steam ahead for Mama. As for one guy who's departing Tuscaloosa, J.C. Latham. And when I say we should pay particular attention to J.C. Latham, certainly the path he took as well. Now, J.C. Latham, it started, I mean, asphalt, not gravel. But J.C. Latham came in as five-star offensive tackle recruit. And he and Brockemeyer, I think, might have been in the same class. But we had this idea because of unreal 18-year-old true freshman Alabama tackles like Jonah and Cyrus and Andre and Cam and these just like mountainous men that would show up, hang out for 3 years, blow up defensive linemen, and then off to the league as a, again, first round, top 10 in a lot of cases. And so we thought that that for somehow in Alabama, that was normal. It wasn't normal like at any other program, but Alabama's like, what's wrong with you? You're halfway through your freshman year, and you don't start at left tackle yet. It's not real. Chris Landry, former NFL scout. We've had him on. We had him on every Wednesday. We had him on every Wednesday for about, three or four years. And the way he put it, He said, Chuck, you know, if somebody has, you know, coming out of high school and they have business aspirations, I know, banking or finance or whatever, he said, if you want the best of the best, then you're going to go get your education at Wharton. You know, go to Penn and then Wharton School of Business. He says, it's the best there is. He says, if you come out of high school and you want your career to be offensive lineman, you go to Tuscaloosa. He said, it is that same sort of spread between, there are a lot of good places to go, and then there's Wharton. He's like, there's a lot of good places. Ain't nothing like Tuscaloosa. And then it wasn't the same. Then it wasn't quite what it had been. And then it was noticeable that Alabama's having some issues up front. Now, I'll give them credit. And we had talked about this in the moment. What they did, figuring out how to block it up against Georgia for the SEC championship game when, like, I don't know, 7 days earlier, a not very great Auburn team had figured them out to the point that Bama's season was on the brink. 7 days later, they're blocking Georgia like that. Now, it was an X's and O's thing. They just outnumbered you. There's a tight end. There's another tight end. There's a guy who's actually an offensive lineman that we're going to put tight end jersey on, and now he's going to be another tight end. And by golly, all right, now we're protecting our quarterback. They figured it out. They had always been figuring it out up to that point by running their five linemen out onto the field. That was the Saban at Bama offensive line version of figuring it out up front. But times change, and you do what you do, and you wind up as SEC champions that day. J.C. Latham, he came in, and there were expectations because of others. Not because of anything to do with J.C. Latham other than, oh, well, he has the same round. I've never seen this kid. Is he from Michigan, I think? And there are some, like Andre Smith was it Huffman, I believe, in Birmingham, Alabama. So sometimes it's local, and you may have seen the kid. I don't know. You go to Maryland? Was that where Cyrus Quanjo was from? You live in Pell City. Not much chance you saw the kid who was a five-star coming out of Maryland. But you may have looked online and saw, oh, well, he's this tall, weighs this much, and he's got five stars. He plays the same spot. Well, he's going to be as good as Andre Smith. Andre Smith was unreal sort of rare, unless you string like four or five of them together. So, JC, what's your issue? I say that because as a true freshman, JC probably was about a B. And I'm talking about on the level of all the SEC offensive linemen together, including the 18-year-old, average all of them together, and JC Latham was probably above average. Too solid. Almost. He was 18. I say include the 18-year-old. That's because you're also including the 22-year-old and the 23-year-old. I think he was about a B. You know what he was as a sophomore? Better than that. You know what he was as this past season as a junior? He got to the point where folks looked at J.C. Latham and the sort of disappointing, why aren't you a little better, a little sooner, like the freshman from like 2 years ago? And said, first-round draft pick. When I say pay particular attention to one draft prospect out of Tuscaloosa, okay, that's J.C. Latham. The path is what I want us to pay attention to. And I guess when I say pay attention, not even like linger on it, just mark it. Because he may be one of the final first-round draft picks from the Saban era. Now, a Bama player who only played for Nick Saban, there won't be any more of those after this year. And so J.C. Latham, when I talk about the path, if you want to Google your computer right now, put quotes around Nick and then Saban, and then do the same for the phrase, it's four words, create value for themselves. Folks, there are radio hosts, guys and girls on TV, public speakers. Anybody who's got to rattle off some words now and again, there are crutches. Don't think that create value, because if you did that, you just brought up examples from 2014, 2023, 2019, 2020. That was something that you would hear Nick Saban talk about a lot. What do you want for your players? Create values for themselves. Do things, make choices, make decisions that create value for themselves. Don't make decisions that takes away value. Make decisions that creates value. Well, what are you talking about? Everything from working out to leave the gun at the apartment. So if you Googled that, and I think somebody just did. Like, there's somebody listening right now, probably multiple somebodies. Nick Saban, create value for themselves. You will see it happen in April. You will see it from August. You will see it from media days in July. You will see it at the SEC media, the SEC championship game media day, first week of December. It wasn't a crutch for him. It wasn't this, all right, well, I'm going to talk to the media, so I'm going to start throwing this stuff out. Y'all ever seen Lou Holtz speaking in person? Not on TV, I'm talking. Not like, oh, yeah, I was at that game day set in Knoxville in 98. No. He wouldn't have been there. Lou Holtz, if you've seen him in person, like, he's got one talk. And it involves this newspaper thing, and he tears up, and then there's the newspaper. That's not what Nick Saban is doing. It's not like he's got this mental Rolodex of about four different themes to get him through any public speaking or interview situation. Folks, he's got a resume. I mean, talk about creating value for a lot of kids. The specific path that I'm looking at with J.C. Latham, NFL coaches, they want ballers. They want mean, legit tough guys. Like, wallet says bad MF-er on it. And the draft prospect from Alabama under Nick Saban, not this draft prospect from Alabama, the draft prospect. The draft prospect. Who are we talking about? The one from Bama under Nick Saban? Oh, yeah. They always had it. NFL coaches want ballers. They want guys got that dog in them. Get after you. Uber competitive. Under Nick Saban, if there was any draft prospect coming out of Tuscaloosa, they always had that dog in them. I think, and by the way, J.C. Latham, he physically, like, he aged 2 years. He grew 2 years. He showed up on campus, and they say, all right, this is your routine to run and lift, and this is how you're going to eat, and then you're going to go compete against NFL linemen every day as an 18-year-old, so go get you some. And by the way, when you're not great immediately, you're going to hear about it, and so there's pressure, so learn that part of being a pro as well. Learn to deal with pressure next. All of this stuff happened to J.C. Latham, and he looked at it, and he was like, yes, screw that noise. I'm a win. I'm going to be on top of all of this. And do you know what the result is from a guy that some people looked at a little bit? Is like, I see the talent. He's good, I guess. He's all right. He's not Andre. You know what he is now? First-round pick. I don't know. He's probably a right tackle. Could be just a massive guard, but I think he's a right tackle. I don't know. In the NFL, that's a pass protector. J.C. Latham is probably anywhere from, I don't know, 15 to 30. He's a first-round pick. And he was the guy that 15 minutes ago, we were all like, yeah, I guess I kind of see a little bit. Yeah, he's got that dog. Mean. Legit. And under Nick Saban, that was the one thing. 40 time, wow, it was a little less. Oh, we measured him. He's 5'11", not 6'1". Like, I mean, there's everybody had a wart. Bryce went first overall, short. Everyone who came out of Bama, though, under Nick Saban, competitive as all get out. And that is that one last little brain cell, that gene that the NFL looks at and said, all right, that's the difference. That's the reason we're going to take this guy instead of somebody else. So it's just something to pay attention to. That's the bigger thing. You know, as once you get past wins and losses, I don't care what the uniform is or how he speaks, accent, whatever. Is that Bama player still coming out with that same, like, deep seated, like it's in his veins? He's a competitor. So, all right, we're going to take a quick break, come back, jump into it next.
Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Thursday on Chuck Oliver Show. Thank y'all so much for coming here for your college football conversation. We do it year-round. That's why we're doing it on February 29th. The SEC has announced the appearance schedule for the media days coming up, football media days coming up, Dallas in July. Monday, July 15th, that Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday wraps up Thursday the 18th in Dallas. It was a Hoover thing, which is south of Birmingham. It was an Atlanta thing a couple of times, Nashville last year. It's going to be in Dallas. It's for sale, so it's a road show. It'll be a really well-run event. It's going to get either ignored or swallowed up there. In particular, like last year in Nashville, where they really love college football in particular and a lot of the programs involved. Like Vanderbilt, we were in Nashville. If Clark Lee's day with the media would have been on a Nashville resident's front lawn, I don't think that guy would have raised the shade. Some of the other programs, oh my goodness, Brian Kelly, I don't talk to him. Lane Kiffin, what? Yes, I love Lane, or at least hearing him, or I hate Lane, or, you know, wherever. But yeah, Lane, yeah. In Nashville, it was kind of an ignored thing. I've said it's going to get swallowed up in Dallas and ignored, but that's just a size thing. And, you know, what do you really value? They love college football out there. At least I know they love Texas football, et cetera. But it's kind of meant for a different setting, I believe. But it's going to be a wildly successful and productive event. My big takeaway from looking at the four-day schedule, I mentioned this last week or 2 weeks ago, the ACC had said, here's our schedule, and then, all right, as far as here are the days we're going to do it. And then after that, a couple hours, was here is the list of the coaches for each of the 4 days. And I was suspicious from the start, and I started my show the next day by saying, I'm suspicious about this. There are only two hooks in all of the ACC, honestly. There are two. If somebody from just a local sports talk station that covers college football anywhere in the footprint of the ACC, anywhere in the footprint of the ACC, if you come back to the station and any sound other than the local team, Florida State and Clemson, you may be fired. Like, I don't need Syracuse. I don't need Wake Forest. NC State, Mac Brown, I can probably get away with Mac Brown as a rejoin. Hey, that was Mac Brown. But as far as we're playing the interview and it's a big deal and you want to tell everybody I sat down with, if you're in Raleigh, I sat down with Dave Doran. We're BFF. Here's what he told me exclusively. And then here's Dabo and here's my – other than Clemson and Florida State, there's no hook. And I said, I'm suspicious. And he said, they just did it. Yeah, it's, they did. Monday is Florida State with the commissioner. Get that out of the way before anybody else is even on the property. The first two, the commissioner and Florida State. Let them go Thunderdome. And somebody will bust the wheel and out you go. So that leads it 3 days later to wrap it up, Dabo. Well, the SEC, it doesn't matter how they configure this. It's one just monster day of either program by brand, interesting head coaches, stuff you really do need to know about, et cetera. I'm going to skip to the last day. It's the, quote, stinker of the bunch. The programs are Arkansas, Auburn, Kentucky, and Texas A&M. The coaches, Sam Pittman, Hugh Freeze, Mark Stoops, Mike Elko. Sam Pittman is hoping by the time he gets there, everybody ran out of ways to ask Billy Napier, how does it feel to know you're about to get fired? And like maybe he gets a pass because they like him more. But Sam Pittman's a good enough interview. Everybody loves Sam Pittman coming around. He'll talk to everybody. Hugh Freeze, very interesting. A lot of pressure, a lot of provocative questions. You can talk to him about Mark Stoops, Mike Elko, sure. That is in the rear view. Barely can see it. You start Monday with Brian Kelly, Lane Kiffin, Shane Beamer, and then, all right, somebody, Clark Lee. Somebody's got to take Clark Lee. You know, Clark Lee has to play two innings when the softball game happens. The rest of the schedule we'll get to is not worth really going to, but it's just wonderful stuff every single day. Like when the consolation prizes, Arkansas, Auburn, Kentucky, and Texas A&M, especially with some of these stories this year for Auburn and A&M, Arkansas is kind of a we understand what's about to happen. It's just, you know, peel some days off the calendar. And folks, this is with Nick Saban no longer in the mix. Now, the Alabama coach, I saw Mike Shula, Dennis Franchione. I've seen everybody just descended upon at media days. Doesn't matter. But Saban is off the board now and is still this way. Hey, how's that Thursday?
Yeah, you know, I was looking at the overall list, and I'm with you, Chuck. I'm a little surprised when you're doing it in Texas. I'm a little surprised at a couple of the choices here because it's going to be hard to get a lot of media that has traditionally gone to this event to go all the way to Dallas. You're either talking about a flight or you're talking about a much longer drive and
it's
expenses.
It's a drive. It's a full day across the state.
Normally, Alabama media, Tennessee media, Mississippi media, Georgia media, you can count on them any of the spots this thing has been. Even Nashville, very easy for all them to get to. So I'm a little surprised that you go with the Alabama-Auburn combo Wednesday and Thursday. That feels to me like you're going to have some of these places say, okay, we're not going to get the first part of this. We're going to show up for the final 2 days. We'll get Auburn. We'll get Alabama. We're not going for Lane and Shane Beamer and Clark Lee and Brian Kelly on day one. We're not going. Like I feel like we're going to get a lot more of the conference getting 2 days here, 2 days there than the full four by this. I just thought it was interesting how they scheduled it.
Yeah, you're right. Texas and Texas A&M are also the Wednesday-Thursday thing. So there is media that can say, you know what, we have the budget. Because it's what we talked about with ACC, and you said, Chucky, it plays out literally dozens of times every July. I either have to rustle up a sponsor or what I spend is on me to go cover this. That is the reality for a lot of folks. And so it looks like you're correct, Heath, that they may have gone a tandem day on a Monday, Tuesday that would make sense for some people, a Wednesday, Thursday that would make sense. Really forward thinking, I think. Actually, I'm going to give them some credit for this.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
Hey everybody, Buck Ballew here, and as a recent customer of Jim Ellis Automotive and a longtime friend of the Vice President, Stacy Ellis, man, I know Jim Ellis Automotive Group takes pride in being a family-owned and operated business. I saw it firsthand. When Stacy's granddad, Jim Ellis, founded the company back in 71, his goal was to treat every customer like family by offering a car buying experience that was both easy and fully transparent. And it worked. 50 years later, Stacy's dad, Jimmy Ellis, grew the organization to become Georgia's largest family-owned and operated automotive group. And today, third-generation family members like Stacy, along with more than 1,700 dedicated team members, are working hard to uphold the values Jim Ellis Automotive was founded on. And that's why Jim Ellis has been around for over 50 years. Enjoy the advantages of buying your next vehicle from a family-owned and operated dealership. Visit jimellis.com or stop by any of their 20 dealerships located throughout Metro Atlanta. Jim Ellis Automotive, where you can always expect the best.
Now back to Southern Sports Today and the Chuck Oliver Show.
It's a Thursday on the Chuck Oliver Show. We talk college football, do it across nine states, 60 sticks. So thankful for the blessing. This is year 10 for us. Want to head out now. We talk Clemson. We got a Truist reporter for everybody. Our Truist reporter for Clemson from the state. It's a paper yonder in Columbia, Chapel Fowler. Chapel, welcome, friend. How you doing today?
Doing well, Chuck. Thanks for having me.
Appreciate your time, man, and your expertise. Okay, let's jump into this. Kay Klubnik, this is the second year with they got a five-star quarterback from Texas, and then they got the biggest offseason offensive assistant hire in college football last year. This is going to be year two with that. How will it look?
Yeah, Yeah, I think, first of all, you talk about that contrast. I mean, around this time last year with that pairing, that Cade Klubnik, Garrett Riley pairing, expectations were through the roof, and rightly so. If you just looked in a vacuum at, you know, what did Cade Klubnik do in the ACC title game against UNC, and what did he show in the Orange Bowl against Tennessee, and what did Garrett Riley do in that ridiculous year he had at TCU? You know, there were a lot of reasons for excitement among Clemson fans. That came back down to earth probably within the first quarter of the first game, which I'm sure you and everybody else remember, that national TV game against Duke. Yep. Monday night, Labor Day, all eyes on Clemson, and you learned really quick that this was this wasn't going to be any like Case Keenum air raid stuff. There were things that needed to be fixed. There was stuff Cade needed to work on, and he's still a work in progress. I think that was kind of one of the main takeaways from Dabo Swinney's, you know, introductory spring practice presser yesterday. They are obviously confident in Cade and Garrett Riley in the offense, but they acknowledge there was a lack of explosiveness, a lack of consistency, a lot of stuff that needs to get better. So my take is, you know, Phil Maffa, the backfield is now without Will Shipley, and we've seen when he's had a backfield to himself what he can do. I think this is going to be a massive year for him. And logically, I think that would kind of settle down the passing game a little bit. It paid Klubnik a few more chances to not maybe do as much, keep things simple, hit the layups, which is something he's still working on. And maybe get a little bit more consistency from there. They have a lot more offensive line continuity this year, but they also had that last year and it didn't really translate. So that's obviously why they fired their former offensive line coach and brought in Matt Luke, big name, Georgia, Ole Miss, all his past experience. And I think it's kind of just consistency across the board is what they need. And the killer turnovers have to stop, because anybody who tuned into any Clemson game last year probably saw one of those ridiculous pick sixes or untimely fumbles or a strip sack that gets returned for a touchdown against Florida State that changes the game. That is something that you can talk about, you can practice, but players need to do that. They need to not fumble the ball at the worst possible time, which seemed to happen on, I don't know, 80% of Clemson's fumbles last year. So lower expectations for offense, and I think they're totally deserved. And it's kind of wait and see, but I think the run game may be a little bit more consistent, better, more worked into what they're doing, and perhaps that can translate to success passing-wise. But big question mark for me, probably the biggest question mark for them right now.
From outside the program, it was easy every recruiting, you know, signing day to look at the wide receivers, and they either look like power forwards or MMA fighters, like these big, giant, huge dudes. And 2 years ago, I saw this kind of shorter, skinnier kid, freshman, lead the team in receiving. Then Antonio Williams got hurt last year, and I don't even know, was he ever really 100% during the season, but is he expected to be 100% this season? Because the kid showed when he had an opportunity as a true freshman, he played, man. He produced. Where is he right now?
Yeah, you're speaking Dabo's language there and bringing up the fact that, you know, one of their best guys wasn't around for the majority of last year. They're also high on Cole Turner, who basically didn't play all of last year as well. But, yeah, Williams has gone on and proved it as a true freshman. He really was not healthy from, like, the third game on. Like, he got some sort of ankle injury, I think, against Florida Atlantic, and that was in and out. And then he had a toe injury. But he came back for that Gator Bowl against Kentucky, and I think he saw flashes and kind of a reminder of what he can do. You know, he was far from 100% in that game, and he didn't have some ridiculous stat line, but I think he ended up with, I don't know, 4 catches, 60 yards, and had a absolutely critical fourth down, third down catch on that final drive of the game, about 15 yards that really got Clemson going. And he was getting to being pretty healthy at that point. He's full go right now. We were out there at the media portion of practice yesterday, you know, no jersey designation on him, no injury, you know, halfway ramping up. He is healthy and he can play inside, outside. That's a huge guy for them, and they missed him a lot. Because like you said, that explosiveness has kind of been lacking, and he's a guy who, whenever he's healthy, has shown that he can make just about any catch, do it from just about anywhere. You know, size-wise, he's not a guy that can go up and exactly rip the ball off the top of a cornerback's head. That's kind of specifically what they've been lacking wide receiver wise. You talk about, you know, the T. Higgins or Mike Williams or DeAndre Hopkins, Sammy Watkins, all these guys. That mold has not really, again, those guys, right? Yeah, like it's easy to get.
It was Deion Kane. Yeah. I mean, like, uh-huh. It doesn't matter. Shake the tree. Clemson receivers fell out of it.
Yeah, it was a ridiculous run, and they've come up short a few years, and it's really shown how important that, you know, just absolute dog of a wide receiver, how important that role is within their offense for success. So Williams has a lot of traits. He's maybe not a 6'4 monster in that regard, but a healthy year from him, I think, is a big net positive for Clemson and definitely for Kate Klubnik as well.
I would have bet my Social Security on Adam Randall. I just would. Flip it around, Barrett Carter. All right, I'm going to tell you where Barrett Carter should be right now. Like, looking at his interview schedule in Indianapolis and saying, all right, Chargers, Giants, Colts. He's an NFL player. What's he doing in Clemson still?
He has told us, he told us just yesterday, and I think you saw it on the tape, he did not have as good of a year in 2023 as he did in 2022. And he told us kind of frankly the information he got back from NFL teams. You know, he is going to be an NFL player, but the information he got back about what he needed to work on, kind of where he was draft status at that point, didn't really sit right with him. He loves Clemson. He wanted to come to Clemson to win national titles. He hasn't done that yet. That played a role. But I think he knows he has another step to take. I mean, it was interesting. If you remember, again, I go back to that first Duke game, really set the tone for so much for Clemson last year. Barrett Carter had Riley Leonard dead to rights for what would have been a sack in a critical moment. Leonard ducks him, ducks two other guys, runs it like 44 yards in for a touchdown. Huge momentum shift in that game. Clemson's really never close again to winning that one. And, you know, a day later, we hear Barrett just admitting, again, he's very frank and honest and quotable in all these interviews, which I appreciate. He just kind of admits straight up, hey, you know, I wasn't in shape. My body wasn't where it needed to be. And, again, part of that is just, you know, game speed is game speed. You can't replicate that. But from that first game, he was like, I'm just not where I need to be right now. And he was disappointed in himself for that. And he rebounded over the course of the season. The Gator Bowl, he had an excellent game. Oh, my gosh. I think he had turnovers on back-to-back offensive snaps that he forced. Just a crazy stat line. So, you know, we've seen flashes from him. He was a big five-star recruit for a reason. But I think it was a combination of a down year by his standards and some of that NFL draft feedback that he got. And just the fact that Clemson has not been the Clemson, you know, that he committed to since he's been there in terms of where they've been, how many wins they've been getting, the playoff competition, all that stuff. So I think everything played a role there. But yeah, he could be in Indy right now there with his buddies. I think the linebackers start drills at 3 p.m. today, so it could be him and Jeremiah Trotter, but instead it's just one of them.
All right, wrapping up, and you actually used a phrase, and it's in my notes, that dog. That everybody knows what that means. Somebody got that dog in them. I was reading some commentary last night, who will be the first corner taken in the draft, Nate Wiggins or Devin Witherspoon. And Devin Witherspoon basically has been described of, he's like 180 pounds of pissed off meanness that just loves hitting people. He's got that dog in him, that uber competitor, whereas Nate Wiggins is a more technically sound, taller, faster, you know, all this other stuff. But they're wondering about, does he have that? Does he have that dog? Like, does he get that shiver when he gets to hit some? Give me the truth on Nate Wiggins. Tell me what he is as an NFL player, and is that profile correct?
Yeah. Well, speed, first of all, is what you think of. You know, there's that clip that's been making the rounds among the draft experts this week, and I'm always happy to watch it whenever it comes up because it really was ridiculous, that chase down strip fumble from behind on Amari Hampton of UNC in that game in November, where Wiggins is nowhere in the play and comes up out of nowhere to pop the ball out of the running back's hands into the end zone for a touchback that prevents UNC from taking a 14-0 lead on the road. He had a similar one a few weeks before at Miami where he chased down a guy from, gosh, I don't even know how many yards, to force another fumble. They ended up recovering that one, Miami did, for a touchdown. But kind of his speed, that raw speed in those moments, is pretty ridiculous. I don't know if he'll touch the combine record by any means when he runs his 40, but I'm sure he's going to have a pretty good time. And again, at that size that he's at, it's a pretty
6'2".
6-2, freaky combination, right? I will say something that, and I'm sure this will come up in the pre-draft process with him, maturity issues. Honestly, you know, this is something that he's been direct about addressing. Dabo Sweeney's been direct about addressing in his time at Clemson. He had a stretch as a true freshman where he was, you know, missing a bunch of classes and not being able to get onto the field because of that. And then he kind of sorted that out. He had a really good sophomore year. He probably should have been the championship game MVP for the ACC title game in 2022. He had this pick six on Drake May that really changed the game. But at the same time, you know, you have Cade Klubnik off the bench doing what he did. So that's deserved. But if it wasn't for Cade Klubnik, he would have been the title game MVP as a corner, which is pretty rare. And this past year, you know, he had a stretch where I think he was benched for 2 out of 3 games or something like that. He came off the bench twice in the middle of the year, which I thought was kind of strange for a surefire NFL draft pick. And Dabo Sweeney told us that, like, once again, you know, he's missed 2 green sessions. You know, he wasn't where he needed to be on our accountability point metric that they track that kind of has positives and negatives of what people are doing in the program on campus and how does that translate to game time. So that's something that he's kind of dealt with on and off. He's been open and honest about that. Hey, I need to get better about that. You know, I'm more focused on this stuff now. And I'm sure he's addressing that substantially and in a good way with all these pre-draft interviews. When you talk about that dog and stuff, I think Dabo has often used the phrase about kids, you know, they have your talent and you want to, and you need your want to exceed your talent to reach your full 100% potential. I feel like he and Wiggins would probably agree that wasn't always the case for him at Clemson, but at the same time, you know, the traits alone are worth a first round pick, which will probably be, but I'd say that's something that kind of came up with him at Clemson. And I'm sure as part of his evaluation as well, just kind of the off field stuff, minor, but you know, commitment, maturity, all those type of things, that's probably something he'll have to answer to a little bit, as he goes through this process. But I'm sure a team will take a stab at him, a well-deserved stab regardless.
Oh, 6'2", oily hips, 4'3". I like all of that. I appreciate your time, friend. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thank you, Chuck.
Chapel Fowler from the state. It's in Columbia. It's a newspaper. And I appreciate him coming on and lending the expertise. Our truest reporter for Clemson today. Dabo had his spring kickoff session press media thing yesterday. And so, and Matt Luke, like one of the best you would imagine, and there's no reason for it to just be advertising. You'd imagine, like everybody, I have casual knowledge of Matt Luke and his abilities. A lot of it comes from people like Chris Landry, for instance, going, wow, Ole Miss's offensive line coach is really good. Wow, their head coach is really good being an offensive line coach. Wow, Kirby hired a good offensive line coach. Well, now Dabo hired him. So, like, that, there's impactful stuff going on. And like, there's still elite talent on that Clemson roster. It dots it. We've talked about, like, last year, certainly 2 years ago, but certainly last year. Oh, the Clemson's got 2 running backs start 90% of the places in America. Well, now they have 1 that would start 90% of the places in America. So instead of having all the, like, 7 NFL prospects on defense, maybe they got 3. And maybe one of them's a first rounder instead of 3 of them off the line. They just reached unrealistic heights. Now they're back to normal human, non-alien sort of heights. But Nate Wiggins, yeah, he's a big, good-looking kid. Wonder if he plays in somebody's face mask, you know, will he beat up somebody on the line of scrimmage? When you talk about when you pair elite first-round talent with I outwork everybody just because I don't like people who don't work, like Julio Jones, go read. There's a story, ESPN.com, go Google, about Julio in high school down in Foley, Alabama. And everybody looked at him and was like, yep, he's got that dog. And he was the best player. Pair those together. We break. Continue next.
It's all. always college football time in the South. Now back to more of the king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
What we found out about 4 or 5 games in, I think we had to find our identity on offense, who we are. We were going to be a little bit more of a run, play action, and then pick our spots to go super fast. We never, like, stopped and said, hey, we're going to slow it down, you know. But that's just kind of how we evolved last year. And when we got to that kind of identity, it really clicked for us. And he played really, really well the last half of the season.
All that is true. Now, all of that is true in the AAC. We've talked about this. If you go look at the Big 12 conference standings from last year, it was Baylor who just had a fall off the earth season. The bottom five teams were Baylor and the four new schools that were playing up and didn't have the old big conference, quote, roster yet. SMU, and that's Rhett Lashley. I'm sorry, that's head coach at SMU. And he rode that Gus relationship, and he was even talking about pace there, to being an assistant, to being an offensive coordinator, to being a head coach, and he's having some success at Southern Methodist. 7-6 his first season, 11-3 last year, and they finished as a ranked team. So that's coming out of the AAC. Now, when I say that they won 11 games, and they went to a bowl game, and they did. Well, they lost the bowl game, and they lost it to a not necessarily great Boston College team, but it's hard to judge what that really means. Well, all right, what else you got besides BC from, say, Power 5? Well, I got Oklahoma, and they lost by 17, and I've got TCU, and they lost by 17. Otherwise, yeah, played Navy, aces. Played Prairie View, fantastic. Played Charlotte, dub, at East Carolina. And you just don't roll into Dowdy Ficklin. Well, you do sometimes. At East Carolina, won by 3 touchdowns. Went into downtown Philadelphia and beat Temple by 55. So, yeah, it was good football. Oh, what a different life it's about to be for SMU. That's my prediction, but he summarized the season correctly. Hey, that's Thursday, man.
You know, Chuck, there's a there's multiple reports, actually, that are out there about the next playoff and what it's going to look like. Now, nobody has said this is absolutely done, but you have Yahoo, ESPN, among others, reporting that it looks like we're headed for a 14-teamer beginning in 26. They'll have 3 automatic berths for the SEC and 3 automatic berths for the Big Ten, 2 each for the Big 12 and the ACC, 1 for whoever that Group of 5 champion is that's good enough to make it in, and then 3 at-large spots, which would be probably Notre Dame most years, and then 2 others for whoever can get in. And I am seeing this reported over and over, Chuck, as, you know, the SEC and the Big Ten are getting their way. They're making everybody bow down to them. Chuck, can you think of a single year in the last 20 years that the SEC, if you just at large took 14 teams, no regard for anything other than best 14 teams, would not have 3 teams in the top 14? Can you think of a single one?
No, this isn't done to make sure the SEC and Big Ten get included. It's to open up 2 more spots for everybody who get left out.
Well, that's the part I find hilarious. The winner here, if you want to call somebody as a winner, now look, you know, if you want to argue that's we shouldn't funny, be having Keith, this many reserve spots, that's a different deal. I have no problem with your argument. But if you're arguing who a winner is, the winner is the ACC. The ACC did not have 2 teams in the top 14 in 2021 or 2023. That's just in the last 3 years. It's not hard at all to remember years, Chuck, where it was Clemson and nobody from that conference that was even remotely good. Now, there's no inherent reason that you can't have Clemson and FSU or Clemson and Miami or whoever be good enough to be top 14 teams. I'm not saying they can't do it, but that conference has repeatedly failed to have 2 teams worthy of national conversation, and now they're going to get 2 in regardless.
Yeah,
this is not the mean old SEC. The ACC's winning here.
Yeah, I got to tell you, you know the way the SEC and Big Ten got their ways? Is you didn't cap it at 3. Like, you talk about guarantee you gave in to them. I promise you, the way that the SEC wanted it, they probably overcame conversation to cap it, to at some point say, we want to make sure these extra spaces are reserved for us. It's likely what just happened was two more spaces got added for programs that would be left out and slash conferences that got left out. There's a chance the Big Ten and the SEC gobble up one of those in a random year as well.
No, I mean, Sankey had said the whole time he was fine with no conference champions of any kind, just 12, 14, line whatever it is, best go. And so the interpretations I'm seeing of this from people who, especially national media people who should know better, just got me scratching my head. This is not the big bad bullies of the SEC and the Big Ten win by getting three spots. Both of those conferences regularly would fill those spots. We have no idea what the Big 12 is now. It's anybody's guess without Oklahoma and Texas what they are. But we know what the ACC has been and been much.
Yeah, you think that guaranteeing the SEC a third team in a 14-team field is some sort of concession? Mm-mm. Just look at when they take four of those teams.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
Hey everybody, Buck Blue here, and as a recent customer of Jim Ellis Automotive and a longtime friend of the Vice President, Stacy Ellis, man, I know Jim Ellis Automotive Group takes pride in being a family-owned and operated business. I saw it firsthand. When Stacy's granddad, Jim Ellis, founded the company back in 71, his goal was to treat every customer like family by offering a car-buying experience that was both easy and fully transparent. And it worked. 50 years later, Stacy's dad, Jimmy Ellis, grew the organization to become Georgia's largest family-owned and operated automotive group. And today, third-generation family members like Stacy, along with more than 1,700 dedicated team members, are working hard to uphold the values Jim Ellis Automotive was founded on. And that's why Jim Ellis has been around for over 50 years. Enjoy the advantages of buying your next vehicle from a family-owned and operated dealership. Visit JimEllis.com or stop by any of their 20 dealerships located throughout Metro Atlanta. Jim Ellis Automotive, where you can always expect the best.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.